Welcome to Gay Mystery Podcast, featuring interviews with renowned LGBTQ authors and up-and-coming talent of mystery, suspense, and thriller novels. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. My guest today is Anne Laughlin, but first we're going to hear from the lovely Justine Adamick with her weekly review. A recommendation. I should say. What's up, Justine?
What's up is I've got a bisexual novel this week. We've pretty much done the whole gamut of LGBTQIA. We've had a number of lesbian novels, a number of gay novels. We had a trans novel. We even had an asexual novel. And it's a little tough sometimes to find bisexual novels that don't involve, you know, threesomes with a mystery tossed on them. And so we sent out the call for it, and we've got this one submitted, and it's been a great find. The main relationship is a female-to-female relationship, but they both are bisexual. One of them has dated men but probably prefers women, and the other one has, you know, dated men but prefers them equally, and they have, now that they have found each other, they've been best friends for years, and they discovered that what they really are is bisexual, and they got together in this.
And I have a couple of guests at least that identify as bisexual coming out in the next few months, so that's good.
Yeah.
Well, before you come in, what's the name of the book?
The name of the book is Out of the Shadows by Michelle Arnold. It's the first book in the Amy Sadler detective series. And I have not read the entire series. I've only read this first book. It's a 4-book series, and it looks like it's going to be good. This one is, it's got the beginning of their story, their relationship story. And about half the book is devoted to that, but it is woven in and becomes part of the main mystery. At the end, it's a happily ever after. And I don't think it's a happily for now, because I think the future books will just have them being a couple that solves crimes together. Amy Sadler is a detective. She was in the sex crimes unit, and she's now moved into the homicide unit. And then her girlfriend, eventually wife, is Lyra, and she is the coroner. Lyra Ward is the coroner. So at the beginning, they have this Rizzoli and Isles vibe, and then it's as if Rizzoli and Isles got together. And, you know, some people probably think the Rizzoli and Isles should have gotten together. Anyway, moving right along. I went off on a tangent of my own little making, didn't I?
And I'm roping you back in.
You're roping me back in, and you're trying to, like, you're making a note of when I said that and figuring out whether to edit that one out. Okay. So this started with, it reminded me of an episode of Criminal Minds. And when I got to the afterward, the author says that she's a big fan of Criminal Minds and is obsessed with that show. It was a particularly gruesome crime told from the point of view of the victim. And as Criminal Minds went on, the crimes got a little more shocking each time. And this one is shocking. And it turns out to be the first of a series of crimes. He's a serial killer, and they both have to catch him. Along the way, they're both put in danger. They have a little bit of a post-traumatic stress disorder from something that happened before the book started. So that adds on to the layer of the trauma of what's in this book. It is also a thrilling book. There's not a lot of plotting through the mystery, not a lot of necessarily clues. I mean, you pretty much, you know what the criminal is kind of this anonymous person. It's not going to be somebody that you know as a character. And what they're trying to do is, you know, catch him.
So would you say that classifies as a thriller more?
Yeah, it's a thriller more. It's a bit of a mystery. I mean, it's a thrilling mystery. Well, I mean, if you look at Criminal Minds, it's as much of a mystery as that is.
It's on the cusp.
on the cusp. Yes.
All right.
It's on the cusp. And it's not so much that they catch the killer, but it's they have to find the victim as they go along. The story centers upon what ends up being the final victim, but a victim along the further into his series of crime. And it's got a fair amount of sex in it. It qualifies as flaming also, but the main thrust of this is a thrilling.
So a thrilling with a touch of flaming.
That's right.
All right.
And it's well done. It's well done. It could be one of the better episodes of Criminal Minds.
Good. That doesn't surprise me.
No.
Did you have anything to talk about from Read Queer Tales?
Well, you know what's out today? What's out today is The Death of the Constant Lover by Lev Raphael. Lev is at the university, State University of Michigan in Michiganopolis. And he is once again tied up with a murder right when he's about to get tenure. And this time he's actually a witness to the murder, you know, just ups the stakes. And the writer of the foreword is Brad Shreve. What was it like writing the foreword, Brad?
It was, first of all, I love Lev. I've had him on twice. So
yeah.
When I first had him on, I said, you know what? I want you back for our anniversary episode because I just thoroughly enjoyed him.
Yeah.
And so I was very honored when I was asked, and I sweated over it for quite a time.
It was well worth the sweat. I remember picking it up and editing it. It didn't require much work.
Yes, you seemed happy with it. And Lev asked me if he could have a copy. So I sent him one and he sent a thumbs up. So
excellent.
So despite my nervousness, I guess it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So buy it just to read my foreword. You don't need to read
That's
the rest.
Exactly
of
right.
No.
And you know, maybe consider asking Brad to do a foreword for your next book.
Oh, good. That's true. You know, I'm glad I did. I've been trying to catch up on some of the older novels. And so that's why I haven't been reading many current ones. And this one felt right in there. You know,
that's right.
So it worked out perfectly.
We're glad to have you do that, Brad. And it's out today. So run and order your copy. It's on Kindle Unlimited.
Can I say one more thing about the book?
Of course.
I liked the characters so much that if it wasn't a mystery, I was engrossed enough in their lives that I probably would have read the book anyway.
Yeah.
The fact that it's a mystery is icing on the top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have a long-term relationship behind them. They have settled into a stable, you know, married life with a home that they care for and rituals that they do. They celebrate the Jewish Sabbath each week. They really have a very deep personal life in addition to their work.
Yeah, they felt real.
Yeah, very much so.
That's it.
I think we're it.
All righty. Thank you. And we'll talk to you next week. Hi, this is Brad. Not only do I interview authors, I write novels too. Check out my Mitchell Riley Mystery Series on my website, bradshreve.com. Anne Laughlin has written 6 novels for Bold Stroke Books. She is the recipient of 4 Goldie Awards and has been shortlisted 3 times for a Lammy Award. She's attended writing residencies at Ragdale, Vermont Studio Center, and others. Anne's short story, It Only Occurred to Me Lately, was a finalist in the Saints and Sinners Short Fiction Contest. She has been previously named an emerging writer by the Lambda Literary Foundation. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you, Brad. Glad to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Before we get to your books, you were named a Lambda Literary Emerging Author in 2008. And then you were asked to return in 2014.
That's right.
Of the many who apply, only a few are accepted. So that's quite an honor.
Thank you.
Describe the experience at the retreat.
Well, in 2008, it was the second year of the retreat. But they definitely had their their act together. It was a really wonderful week of workshops that were divided among genres. So obviously the poets worked together, the fiction writers, and then they also had a category for genre fiction that year, which is what I was in since I'm a crime writer. So my teacher was, Claire McNabb. I almost forgot her name. Claire McNabb, who is actually a very big name in lesbian mystery writing. She was, she wrote the Claire Ashton series back in the day, and she was a marvelous teacher. And it was a very fast week with lots of activity and a lot of inspiration. I'd only been writing 3 years or so at that point, and it was incredibly motivating.
Well, in addition to that retreat, you've attended a month-long residence at Ragdale or Ragdale?
Correct,
and,
yes.
And then 3 times you attended the Vermont Studio Center, as well as others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've attended a couple writing residencies that literally closed down when I walked out the door. It was like their last hurrah. What I've been doing lately is doing my own writing retreat. So I actually leave in 3 weeks to go to New Mexico, where I stay in a little casita down in southern New Mexico. It's completely remote. It's like quarantining in essence. And I'll be there for 2 weeks working on my current manuscript. And so I've been doing that the last 3 years, as opposed to organized writer's retreats. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of getting away and concentrating on your writing, and just having that dedicated space is, it's a real gift to any writer.
Well, the New Mexico mini retreat sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's great. I'm a little concerned because New Mexico has a quarantining requirement right now if you come into the state, but mm-hmm. my argument is going to be I'm quarantining.
So. Well, hopefully that'll work.
Yeah, hopefully they're not policing it. If I go to the grocery, they're not policing it.
Now, in what ways have these retreats advanced your writing career, do you feel?
I think concentration and focus, and just getting the words down. So when I'm here in Chicago, I write in the early mornings, and I'm really only good for a couple hours or so. Mm-hmm. But somehow when I'm on a writing retreat, you know, I can write for hours and really get a lot of words down. So it's great if you're in the beginning part of a manuscript, just to kind of lay down some words and get your manuscript underway. And it's also great for when you're revising a manuscript, which is what I'll be doing when I get to New Mexico shortly. It's just the, it's just the lack of distractions of any kind that allow that focus.
Are you able to log in to the internet?
Yes, thank God. Yeah. I love solitude. I it's actually one of the things I love most about this New Mexico experience. But without the internet, I think I would go bonkers. So, yeah, I have that.
So you still have the dangers of Facebook.
That's right. Yeah. I try to get out, but they pull me back in every time.
Yeah, I know what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
Your most recent novel, Money Creek, was published in September, and it's a standalone novel.
Yes.
Correct? Okay. Would you tell us the story?
Yeah, this is the story of Claire Lehane, who is a young lawyer in New York, in Chicago. Everything else is set in New York. This is set in Chicago. And she works at a high-powered law firm. And Claire's kryptonite is that she is a pill addict, most specifically a speed addict. And she became one in law school and then carried the habit with her into her young career as a lawyer. And as the book begins, we see that Claire is starting to get in trouble with her addiction. So she screws up at work for the second time and ends up quitting her job, you know, seconds before she was going to get fired. So she's out of a job. And the story really revolves around her decision to move down to rural Illinois and start a new life down there. And the reason for staying in Illinois was simply so she could continue to practice law. And the reason she moved to a rural area is she had that thought in her mind that a lot of addicts do, that if they just change their location, everything will be fine, that they can start a new life and it won't be, they won't be crippled by their addiction, which proves to be, of course, not the case once Claire arrives in Money Creek, which is the name of the town. So the rest of the story involves her trying to get clean, failing miserably at that, and then finding a new drug dealer in this small town. And the drug dealer turns out to be the son of her boss. So she's got right there, she's got some tension going. And the drug dealer, whose name is Henry, is part of a larger drug organization that tries to absorb Claire in their inner workings. And then it kind of comes to a head when there's an ambush and the large part of the drug organization is killed. She's a witness, and everything starts converging so that she starts using more to try to cope with all the pressures that are on her, and you know, her life just starts falling apart. So we see basically the story is a two-part story. It's one is the arc of who the murderer is, who the person is who killed the three people in the ambush, and other crime-related aspects to the story. The other through line is Claire's addiction, of course, and that she is on the road to bottoming out toward the end of the book. And, you know, the reader then anticipates what's going to happen to her after that. There's also a bit of a love story in there as Claire falls in love with a woman named Freya, who is a police officer and a member of the drug task force. So here's Claire, the drug addict, falling in love with the drug task force member. And that, of course, causes some conflict for her as well.
I would imagine. Very good rundown. Thank you.
Oh, sure.
It's hard to describe a mystery without giving too much away, and you did a really good job of it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so it's very difficult. You're right.
Now, today is your sobriety birthday, and I think it's 31 years, you said?
That's right, 31 years.
We're recording this about a week before the show airs. Now, obviously, you use some of your experience in this novel, but in general, have you been able to use your experience as an alcoholic in recovery in your novels?
I have. I've tried to not overdo it, if you know what I mean, but I have used my experience. I've had all of my novels are standalone novels, so I've had a variety of protagonists, including private investigators, police officers, and I think an amateur sleuth as well. So some of these characters have flirted with alcoholism. I have one character in the book, The Acquittal, who is a bipolar sufferer. And as with many bipolar patients, she also has had an abuse problem. So when that book takes place, her bipolar disorder is under control and she limits herself to one beer a day. But the tension is there that, you know, she's limiting herself. It's a conscious effort. And then I have another, my very, very first book, the protagonist was a recovering alcoholic in that also. And so through flashbacks, and the same with the bipolar book, through flashbacks, we see their active disease. But I try not to, if I talk about alcoholism, I tend to show it as it affects the active user or alcoholic as opposed to a recovery story. I haven't done really a recovery story yet. And I'm hesitant to do that. Just, probably it's not as interesting. there's that. There's always a lot more interest in seeing people self-destruct than you know, rehab themselves. And then I think there's the language of recovery that I don't really, as a writer, don't really want to use. And so for whatever reason, I've dealt more with the effects of addiction as opposed to the recovery from it.
Well, as an individual that's also sober and have bipolar disorder, your books definitely interest me.
Yeah, well, pick up The Acquittal and see if I got anything right.
The Acquittal, okay.
I consulted with two or three psychiatrists to write that book, so hopefully it's fairly accurate.
Well, I'll put a big star next to the name, and I'll let you know how you did.
Okay.
So, Money Creek, how'd you come up with that name?
Well, I drove down. I kind of put my finger on the map of Illinois and picked a town to go scope out to use as a setting for the book. And as I was driving down to central Illinois, I drove by, you know how they have little signs, little brown signs that announce a river or, a point of interest. Mm-hmm. I passed one of these little brown signs that said Money Creek. And I thought, God, what a great sounding creek. It's like, why? I just like the sound of it and the fact that it doesn't really have anything to do with money. It's just kind of a fun name. So I decided to use that as the name of the town.
Do you do much research in your novels?
I do. All my novels are contemporary, so I haven't had to delve into historical fiction research, which I'm kind of interested in doing. I've always had the desire to write a novel about women in the French Resistance, and I have done quite a bit of research about that, so that might still be in the future. But, you know, for the book, for instance, The Acquittal, I did a lot of research on bipolar disorder. I wrote a book called Runaway that had to do with survivalists out west, and I did a ton of research on that kind of subset of America, and that was really interesting.
Well, I think it's great that you were talking about you were going to write about a small town in Illinois, and to do that, you chose to go look for a small town in Illinois. So it sounds like you're nitpicky to a good degree.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was really instructive to just spend some time in the town and get that setting in place. But other than that, I had to kind of make up what it's like to live in a small town. So I could see physically what constitutes a small town, but trying to get that feel of everyone being in everyone's business. And I hopefully got that right.
I'm sure you did. And no town is necessarily the same as the other. So
that's right.
You can't
that's
really right. go wrong. And I found the, a lot of times it is the little things. I live in the LA area, and my novels take place in, well, at least the first one took place in the Silver Lake district, the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I start writing, and I'm like, you know, it's been years since I've actually been in Silver Lake. So I got on Google Maps, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have to go take a drive because it doesn't look anything like I remember.
I bet. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really, I think actual, you know, real research or interviews, physically seeing things informs writing in a way that you almost can't point out or describe. It just it kind of imbues you with something that you draw on as you're writing. And I think it's irreplaceable. I think you can really tell when that's not done.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
What's the most interesting thing you've learned in your research?
Well, here's a little nugget. When I was researching the survivalists, I discovered that there was a real estate agency out in Idaho that specialized in selling real estate to survivalist groups. So which just astounded me. And it even had a name like Survivalist Realty or something like that. I mean, it was crystal clear what they were doing. And they would describe their properties in terms like set on, you know, 500 acres with a defensible ridge. So, you know, so just catering to the paranoia of survivalist groups. But yeah, all the research on that was pretty interesting.
Well, it's certainly a niche market for them. I doubt there's many companies that specialize in that.
And they're in the right location, because that's ground zero for a lot of the survivalists. I also found, you know, lots of research in Michigan too for survivalist groups.
I think I mentioned to you earlier, I grew up as a little kid in
Niles,
Michigan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I have family still. And I'm really surprised when I found out there's quite a bit of survival groups. And I think most of it tends to be up in the Upper Peninsula, if I'm right.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I can't say for sure, but it tends to be much more rural up there.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Now, earlier you mentioned that your novels have all been standalones.
Right.
Is there a reason you haven't written a series?
No, there is no reason I haven't written one, other than I keep having these ideas that don't lend themselves to a series. But the book I'm working on right now features a private investigator in Chicago, and I'm considering that will be the first book in a series. So I've developed this private eye protagonist and her, you know, her associate investigator and the cop who helps them out. And I've tried to create this cast of characters that hopefully can sustain a series. So that's my hope. I'm going to try to get this picked up in the mainstream, so that, you know, whether it's a series or not, all depends on what a publisher says.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Doesn't it all?
Well, if you think it's the first of a series, be sure to write every detail down for the next books.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
You need a series Bible.
Yes. Well, yeah, I'm no George R.R. Martin, but there is enough to keep track of.
From what I can see, all of your novels have a mystery element to them, yet some are categorized as mysteries and some are categorized under romance. Mm-hmm. What to you is the dividing line as to whether to categorize a book as a mystery or a romance?
I would say it's a fairly fluid line. My first book, Sometimes Quickly, was definitely a romance that had I would call that one romantic suspense. It had a crime story, but it was largely about the relationships between a couple sets of women. And Runaway, which was Lammy nominated in the romance category, pretty prominently featured the relationship between the protagonist and this other woman. But from there, I don't know exactly. It really has to do with the prominence of the love story. And my publisher actually is the one who will decide what category it fits in. Mm-hmm. So if I submit a manuscript, and the last two or three or four books have all fallen in the mystery category, because I have ratcheted back a little bit on the romance and concentrated more on the character development as well as the crime plot, and not so much on, you know, happily ever after or any of the other romance tropes.
Yeah.
So I would say I'm pretty firmly a crime writer now, as opposed to any kind of romance writer.
Crime writing is not easy, but I find romance much more difficult.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
Yeah.
I found it easier. I think I found it easier because the intricacy of the plot doesn't need to be there in the way that a crime novel does. And maybe that just for me specifically, that's maybe the more difficult part of writing a novel to me is getting a plot that, you know, is exciting, paced well, and clever, and has a, you know, a really good ending. Those are, to me, the major challenges of being a crime writer. To me, the relationship stuff and the character development tends to come a little more naturally.
Well, it sounds like, at least in Money Creek, and I don't know about your other novels, you have several arcs that you're having to keep track of.
Yes.
So you make your work harder for yourself.
I do. But I believe, I definitely believe that subplots are so important to really create the richness in a book, for an experience for the reader where, you know, they have more to look forward to as they're turning the pages.
Yeah, I brought this up so many times on this show. The listeners are probably sick of me hearing talking about it. But it used to be Agatha Christie era. You didn't really know much about the sleuth. I mean, we knew a little about Miss Marple, but not a whole lot, and the others. And that developed over time where people didn't want to just put a puzzle together. They wanted to know the individual as well.
Oh, I think that's one of the defining changes that's occurred in crime writing over the years, and to me has made it a much more fun experience. I mean, I think everyone loves series because they get to know that character, and then they get to know, you know, a fair amount of detail about their personal life and whatever foibles, you know, happen in their interpersonal relationships. And to me, it's a much more fun experience, though, you know, all respect to Agatha Christie, of course.
Well, she wasn't the only one. She was just the first one to come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think once that relationship is developed between the protagonist and the reader, then when things go wrong, it's actually much more impactful to the reader.
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. And, you know, you have something vested in the character. Especially as you continue on in a series, you know, you've spent some serious hours with that character. And, you know, I'm sure readers develop expectations of characters too, as the series develops.
You've written quite a few short stories.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I could see, a good many of them are strictly romance, and
yes,
some of them are erotica.
Uh-huh.
Have you considered writing a full novel that falls traditionally under either of those genres, or maybe you have?
I have written an erotic novel under a pen name, which I'm not going to share with you.
Okay, it's good to keep them separate.
Yes, very good to keep them separate. And actually had a lot of fun writing that book, and it was Lammy nominated as well. But I have moved, you know, I've just moved away from that as time has gone on. So you asked about writing a book under, it's either erotica or what was the other one?
Romance.
Oh, romance. I might write another love story. I would almost like to think of it as a love story as opposed to a romance, in that if I do write a non-crime novel that has to do with a love relationship, that it not necessarily follow the conventions of the genre.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that includes an unhappy ending or just a messy ending, you know, that would be the biggest line to cross in the romance genre, is to not have a happily ever after ending. But I don't know if that book is in me. I am interested in writing something other than crime. I just don't think I'm that close to it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you're a Chicago real estate agent.
Yes.
And I know being a real estate agent is not easy and requires long hours.
Yeah, it sure did this summer. The summer was unbelievably busy.
How are you able to find the balance in your life?
Well, generally, I'm kind of at the end of my real estate career, and I should be retiring in the next year or two. And so actually my practice is ratcheting down. So I am not, other than the summer, which was really, really busy. Like right now, I'm not busy at all. The market has come to a screeching halt. So I have plenty of time to write. But as I was mentioning earlier, for some reason, my writing style is to start very early in the morning and go a couple hours. And it seems that after that, I'm not productive. So that doesn't, I can still work a full day and do that. I can't use and haven't used my real estate career as a reason to not write. Usually the time is there.
Well, I'm surprised. I generally don't like talking about the pandemic because people hear enough of it. But I'm really surprised with the summer being busy when you consider it going on.
So were we. Yeah, well, a lot of it, not to go into real estate, I'll just quickly say that a lot of it was pandemic related. So a lot of people moved to Michigan, for instance, moved out of the city and went. A lot of people moved to the suburbs. So there was this thinking that if I can work from home, I don't have to commute to the office. So it doesn't matter where I live. And there was a lot of movement because of that. And people, you know, having to work, two people having to work at home created space problems. So a lot of people bought up just to have more room to work comfortably at home. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a lot of reasons, but things really started slowing down about 4 weeks before the election. And I think that was very related. I think people were nervous about the election. No one knows, you know, no one knew what was going to happen in this country. And we still don't, you know, to some degree. And so I think that slowed things up. Plus, this is right now, it's a traditionally slow time of year.
With the holidays coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Now, I know you were showing a house once when a client pulled a gun on you, which I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Share that
story. You want the story. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the story?
Yeah. Well, I had a client and we were looking at houses in a northwest neighborhood of Chicago. And I had an appointment to see the house by using a lockbox to get the key. So I got the key. I'm with my client. I unlock the front door and an alarm just starts blaring. And we're standing in the foyer, kind of stunned by the noise, when this man comes running down the stairs in the living room with a gun pulled, and he, you know, whips the gun around and aims it at us. And it turned out, we were basically puddles at that point, but it turns out that it was a divorce situation. And the husband didn't know about the real estate appointment and decided to sleep in the house, which was empty that previous evening. And it turns out he was a cop, which was a good thing because he didn't, surprising as this is to say, he didn't start shooting as soon as he came down the stairs. But so I just said to my client as we left, you know, it's really not always this exciting.
That is something.
Yeah, it was.
Now you're writing a new novel. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a peek as to what we can expect?
Sure. This is a, as I mentioned, this is a private investigator novel. My character is named Nell Carpenter, and she has a best friend who is murdered in the beginning of the book. And this best friend worked in the pharmaceutical industry. So what the book starts out being about is some corporate espionage between that pharmaceutical company and a pharmaceutical company that is not unlike the one that produced OxyContin. Mm-hmm. So we've got a family, very nasty family, trying to steal formulas from this best friend's company. And so that's going on. And then Lucy has killed the best friend. And so the story is Nell trying to find Lucy's murderer and running up against, what is she running up against? I am drawing a complete blank about what my book is about. Basically, she's investigating the family members to try to find out who killed Lucy, and it's a procedural of sorts. She does have a love interest who is the cop. That's not an unusual pairing. Mm-hmm. And I have three scenes left to write, and I'm going crazy trying to write them. I mean, I'm coming up with endings that just aren't good enough, so I'm throwing those out. And this is a process that's not that unusual, but every time I go through it, I think I am never going to be able to finish this novel. How am I going to be clever enough to do this right? I can't do, you know, that's where I'm at right now with my writing. So I'm hoping to have the first draft done in the next week, really, so that I can take the whole manuscript with me to New Mexico and work on it there.
So we hope to expect it next year sometime?
You know, I'm going to, I hope so. Yes.
Yeah. When you are looking for a new book to read, what genre are you most likely to start your research or start your search?
I am equally divided between literary fiction and crime fiction. I mean, it's really almost 50-50. So right now I'm reading the newest book by Lisa Unger, who is one of my favorite crime writers. She writes psychological suspense, and she's excellent. Right before that, I read Emma Donahue's new book, which I would classify more as literary fiction. And so I kind of trade off. And I follow the New York Times book review pretty closely. I get a lot of blogs and newsletters about books, and that's usually how I pick new books and personal recommendations.
Yeah, I keep trying to expand my horizons, and you know, I keep telling myself it would help my writing to check out other genres and dive into them. But every time I want to read a book, I want to read a mystery.
Oh, okay. I was just going to ask. Yes, is that what you read?
Yeah,
mostly.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, it's the genre is as broad as can be. You know, I just read Tana French's new book, and she's regarded as a basically a literary mystery writer, which is almost a subgenre in the whole crime writing world. And of course, they can have a mystery novel can be about absolutely anything. I mean, the one I'm writing now is about, you know, the search for this woman's killer. It's also about the fact that Nell's mother is dying. So we have this subplot of her relationship with her mother. So, you know, I think that a crime novel has every opportunity to be as rich as a work of literary fiction. There's really, I think sometimes the only dividing line is that a crime is involved. And then sometimes in literary fiction, they write about a crime. I mean, I think the distinctions are so blurred that they're almost unhelpful in many ways.
Yeah.
And I think there's, you know, there, I think there's still, you know, I think there's still the snobbery of literary fiction, somehow thinking crime fiction is somewhat less artful. And I just don't believe that's the case.
Oh, I'd be happy to argue anybody on that case.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, we have some of the best stylists and certainly some of the cleverest minds to come up with some of these storylines are amazing.
Well, again, your name's Anne Loughlin, and the name of your newest novel is Money Creek.
Yep.
Now, I know they can get it from Boldstrup Books.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as, I presume, other outlets?
Yeah, anywhere you order online books, you'll be able to buy Money Creek. And I hope you do, and I hope you enjoy it.
Okay. Well, and I'll put a link to the book. I have your website.
Nice. So
I'll definitely make sure in the show notes, I put a link to that as well.
Thank you, Brad. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
My pleasure.
Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.